This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, January 17th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. 2023 is likely to usher in a new push when it comes to space launches. And while over the past 2 years, much of the focus has been on human space travel, this year, the space race may be more about satellites and government defense. On today's show, our aerospace reporter Micah Maidenberg tells us what to expect and why the private space sector may have to make some changes to get government contracts. That's after these headlines. Google says a case before the Supreme Court challenging the liability status of online platforms like YouTube could upend the internet. The search giant, which owns YouTube, is at the center of a case that the High Court is set to hear in February. The family of a woman who was killed in the 2015 Islamic State terrorist attack in Paris claims YouTube aided the terrorists by recommending its videos to users. The family argues that liability protections known as Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act are overused by platforms, which should have some responsibility for the content they suggest to users. In a court filing last week, Google said that scaling back liability protections could lead internet giants to block more potentially offensive content, including controversial political speech, while also leading smaller websites to drop their filters to avoid liabilities that can arise from efforts to screen content. Our Google reporter Miles Krupa says the ruling could have big ramifications for any platform that relies on user-generated content.
Think about something like Yelp, which relies on restaurant reviews posted by everyday people, or even things like Google Maps or YouTube or Facebook. So it really affects a wide swath of the internet economy as we know it. And for years, these companies have relied on Section 230 to basically shield them from liabilities associated with the content those people post on their websites and apps. It's been a huge area of discussion since this case started making its way through the courts, and I imagine it will be a dominant part of the discussion for the rest of the year.
Chinese ride-hailing service Didi has gotten the green light from China's cybersecurity regulator to restart new user registrations, suggesting Didi's app will soon return to mobile app stores. Chinese app stores were ordered to remove the service a year and a half ago as authorities conducted a cybersecurity probe. Didi said it has rectified security issues that regulators found in the investigation. The Cyberspace Administration of China didn't respond to requests for comment. But Monday's announcement is the latest sign that Beijing is easing its crackdown on the country's internet giants. In another sign the country may be moving past the multi-year crackdown, China has taken a 1% stake in a subsidiary of Alibaba through an entity controlled by the country's internet watchdog. The move indicates Beijing plans to keep a tight leash on the sector. Separately on Friday, China's central bank said Alibaba's fintech affiliate, Ant Group, has corrected financial issues raised by authorities, including unlicensed operations and infringement of consumer rights. The move clears the way for Ant to apply to become a fully regulated financial holding company. It's the last step in an overhaul of Ant's business that started more than 2 years ago, after the company was forced to call off its initial public offering. And the Securities and Exchange Commission is suing cryptocurrency lender Genesis and crypto exchange Gemini, claiming they violated investor protection laws. At the center of the lawsuit is a lending program called Gemini Earn, where customers of Gemini loaned their digital assets to Genesis in exchange for interest payments. Gemini took a fee for arranging the loans. The SEC said Genesis should have registered the product. The lawsuit comes at a time when the two crypto firms have been feuding. Genesis abruptly paused withdrawals from the program mid-November in the wake of FTX's collapse. tied up is about $900 million in assets from over 300,000 customers, according to the SEC. Our financial enforcement reporter, Dave Michaels, has more.
Clearly, SEC is paying attention for investor protection purposes to cases where crypto investors are getting harmed by this sort of crypto winter, by the collateral damage that's come from the failure of the crypto exchange FTX. So I think that matters to the SEC, that there is some putative sort of investor harm here. It doesn't mean that the fight is going to be solved quickly and that Genesis is going to give this money back to investors, but it does certainly put pressure on Genesis to do that.
Gemini's co-founder said in a tweet that the company looks forward to defending itself against the lawsuit. A spokeswoman for Genesis didn't comment. All right, coming up, taking off in 2023, more commercial space launches and tensions between spacefaring nations. What to expect from the space industry this year? That's after the break.
This podcast is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm you share something with, listening. They take the time to understand you and your business so you get the best solution, not more noise. Start a conversation at gt.com.
The next generation of rockets built to launch U.S. spy satellites are going to have to meet some new requirements. The contractors building them will have to show those rockets are able to fend off interference by China and Russia, according to people briefed on an upcoming Pentagon competition. It's a sign of just how crucial governments are viewing the use of space, and it comes as private competition to supply rockets, satellites, and launch materials gets even fiercer. With me to discuss this is our aerospace reporter, Micah Maidenberg. Hi, Micah. Great to have you back on the show.
Hey, Zoe. Great to be here.
Let's start off with this news about the Defense Department preparing to issue new requirements that rockets that send up spy satellites to orbit be able to fend off interference. Micah, why is the Pentagon putting this into their new rules?
Well, broadly speaking, they're putting it into this sort of space launch contracting round because defense officials, Pentagon leaders, are increasingly focused on China's capabilities in space. Russia's space operations have also been drawing more attention from military planners of late. In 2021, for example, the country used a missile to destroy one of its defunct satellites. And more recently, Russian officials have said that U.S. commercial satellites could be targeted if they were found to be assisting Ukraine. So if you're the Pentagon and you're buying rockets and you're putting highly sensitive, very expensive in some cases, satellites on those rockets to go to orbit, you want some assurances that those vehicles can deliver the goods and avoid potential threats, you know, or hazards as they're providing that transportation, if you will.
How are the private companies that would be bidding for these contracts reacting to this kind of request?
So to be sure, this is a procurement. This is the government, the Pentagon, you know, buying services from companies. And, you know, rocket companies, a lot of them have really been tracking this very closely to see how the Defense Department is going to kind of structure this acquisition, how they're going to buy rocket launches. And we're expecting to get more details about that, you know, as soon as next month. But it's a big deal for the industry because the Pentagon is a big steady client and commands a lot of prestige and credibility and, of course, revenue that these companies are chasing after as well.
I want to talk about one company in particular that really stood out over the last couple of years. That's Elon Musk's SpaceX. It conducted 61 missions last year, and Musk said back in August that he wants to complete up to 100 this year. Micah, how big a deal would that leap be, and how does SpaceX plan to accomplish that?
Yeah, I mean, look, 61 missions in 2022 was already a big deal. That was by far and away the most of any private space company in the globe, and it represented, call it about a third of all orbital missions that reached orbit last year. So right just off the top, 61 is big. Getting up to 100 would be another big leap. SpaceX has demonstrated pretty strong capacity to both build rockets And perhaps more importantly, but perhaps sometimes not discussed as much, like when their reusable components of those rockets come back to Earth, the company is very good at revamping them, getting them back into shape so they can be quickly used again. And so part of it is getting from 61 to 100 orbital flights is that sort of on the ground turnaround of the boosters that listeners may remember or have seen before online or whatnot, like coming back to Earth. And that's going to be a big challenge to sort of do that almost at 100 times next year. It's a lot of work. You don't have a lot of room for error when you're trying to quickly turn these around. But that's the plan, at least.
How much competition does SpaceX face when it's trying to do these launches?
This year, a lot of new rockets are slated to come onto the market. United Launch Alliance, which is owned by Lockheed Martin and Boeing, is planning to test fly its forthcoming vehicle, Vulcan Centaur, relatively soon. Blue Origin has been pushing to get its new Glenn rocket up and operational, though it's not clear if the company is going to try to launch it this year. And there's other rockets kind of in the works. So even as SpaceX pushes toward that up to 100 orbital flight goal for the year, other rocket companies are taking aim at the market with their own fresh vehicles to bring some more competition.
Let me ask you about another private company, Virgin Orbit. Last week, it had a failed mission to carry commercial satellites to orbit from a new site in the UK. Can you tell us, Micah, what happened and how big a blow is this for Virgin Orbit and for the new UK site?
Right. So this mission was a very high-profile launch. Of course, recall that Virgin Orbit uses a modified Boeing 747 to fly a launcher into the air, where that launcher then drops from the plane and shoots off into orbit to deliver satellites. And what the company has said so far is that the rocket was dropped. It reached sort of space altitude, but at some point, like later in the mission, part of the rocket experienced an anomaly. And that anomaly prevented, you know, the mission from being successful and the satellites from being deployed as expected. The company hasn't said much yet or provided much more details beyond that. They're still doing analysis of data and investigating kind of what went wrong. The UK, more generally, hasn't been launching the same kind of way as the US and China, which are by far and ahead out front in terms of orbital missions. And this was the first orbital flight, first orbital launch from England, and it didn't work. So it's not the outcome by any means that Virgin Orbit and the local spaceport and other officials were hoping for.
That's our aerospace reporter, Micah Maidenberg. Thanks for joining us, Micah.
Thank you, Zoe. Have a great one.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.